This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. At 8:35 a.m. local time on Friday, 12 days and 22 hours after the National Hurricane Center first observed a tropical depression forming out at sea, Hurricane Dorian officially made continental landfall, bringing with it gusts, surge, and rains over Cape Hatteras, North Carolina. It had been a long time coming.
Here on mainland Puerto Rico, they dodged a bullet.
News from space show the hurricane clenching like a fist as it stalks the Bahamas. It now appears the storm could stall there for a few days.
It could go anywhere. It could, like these numbers are showing you, come on shore somewhere around West Palm or Melbourne and then travel right at the coastline, still a Category 2.
First day it was going up, the next day it was coming at us. Then it's going up, and now it might be coming at us again. So it's a wait-and-see game.
As you know, as I know, the storm has been very unpredictable up to this point.
It certainly has.
In lieu of certainty about landfall, there were probabilities, good and bad, streaming out of television sets and emergency radios. And there were also less formal sources, like, for example, the White House, where the president on Wednesday used a Sharpie to doctor one of his agency's weather maps. This to justify his tweets and statements incorrectly including Alabama in the storm's likely path.
The original path that most people thought it was going to be taking, as you know, was right through Florida, where on the right would have been Georgia, Alabama, etc.
And that map that you showed today looked like it almost had like a Sharpie.
I don't know.
Trump is far from the only social media rologist. As the New York Times reported last weekend, quote, in the absence of a surefire track for the storm, the Times wrote, some amateur forecasters are sharing misleading information online, sometimes by posting an especially severe model as if it were a definitive prediction. And so now we turn to the best source of meteorological information for Floridians who spent days waiting and waiting and waiting for a crawling storm system to strike.
We're going to be your station, and we're going to be our entire team of meteorologists, the ones that can give you the facts without the hype and keeping the fear and the anxiety as level as possible, because I understand. I know why you're anxious. It doesn't turn, and you're worried, but it's going to turn. Now back to you guys.
We deal in probabilistic forecasting, but people are used to deterministic forecast. They want to know, is it coming or not? And we don't speak that language.
John Morales is the chief meteorologist at WTVJ NBC6 in Miami.
We give you the probability that tropical storm force winds will strike you, probability that hurricane force winds will strike you. When we look at the cone of concern for a hurricane, we talk about that statistically the hurricane will track through that cone 67% of the time, 2 out of 3 times, and 1/3 of the time, the forecast will be so off that it will fall outside of that cone of concern.
And if that storm that you just described happens to, I don't know, scoot north or eastward and sparing what was a likely target, you still weren't wrong, because there was a 33% chance that it would do just that.
I've been in the business of weather communications and science communications for almost 30 years. I understand that we need to try to communicate that nuance better so that people can understand that the forecast can still be right, even though they end up maybe not getting the expected conditions that people think they're going to get.
Well, I'm going to assert that as an industry, as a discipline, you have done a really crappy job of getting the public to internalize that nuance.
That's really hard. Human nature does not think probabilistically. Human nature sees the danger or it does not. I mean, that's part of the challenge of communicating the threat of the climate crisis, right? It's a relatively distant, for most people, relatively distant threat, and they just have a very difficult time internalizing that, especially when there are so many uncertainties in that type of forecasting as well.
There's even a sort of bizarre disappointment attached to having a storm which so threatened you yesterday passing by you today. You know, people have taken precautions, you know, they're nailing their shutters to the siding, they're evacuating. And then when the storm leaves the area safe, there's a part of them that's not relieved, but mad.
We just ran a piece of how to return to the hardware store the goods that you brought to prepare for a hurricane, which, by the way, you are allowed to return, including, you know, plywood and sandbags and all these things. As long as you have a receipt, all you have to do is go return it. But yeah, some people do get frustrated.
All that said, as a forecaster, you have processing tools to predict the paths of storms that, you know, even 10 years ago weren't available to you. How much better is the forecasting now than in days of yore?
It is remarkably better. The average forecast errors have been cut in just about 50% in most of the time periods that we look for verification on, being 24, 48, 72 hours, and even 5 days out. And as a matter of fact, as a consequence, the forecast cone of concern from the National Hurricane Center has been shrinking. Even back in the Katrina days in the year 2005, the cone of concern when Katrina was departing Florida and heading towards the North Gulf Coast would have encompassed all the way from Houston to the Florida Panhandle. But these days, that cone of concern is much narrower. Where there are still significant challenges, however, is understanding the internal physics of a small, very powerful cyclone like a hurricane. Hurricanes are not big. They're not like winter storms, which cover many, many, many hundreds of miles across. Hurricanes are relatively small systems, and the computer forecast models have a difficult time assimilating the internal physics of what's happening there near the eye, where the winds are spinning so quickly and the pressure is so low. So intensity forecasting has improved slightly, but not nearly as much as the track forecasts have.
Now, one thing that has changed remarkably, also technological in nature, is the internet and the capacity for individuals to track the weather on a moment-by-moment basis and also to pass along information, good and less good. What effect has that had on how you do your job, and how has it benefited meteorologists, and how has it caused them grief?
Well, it's caused a lot of grief, in my very personal opinion, as a professional in this business for a long time. Everybody knows that I'm a just-the-facts forecaster, a meteorologist. I fight tooth and nail against exaggeration and overhyping of weather situations. But these days, we have a twofold situation. First, broadcast news in general, as ratings continue to be fragmented with more and more choices, we've got fewer eyeballs watching. And there's a certain level of desperation in newsrooms around the country to have weather carry their newscasts, because weather is one of the top reasons that people watch local broadcast news. What you are specifically referring to, though, is what's happening on social media platforms, which is where everyone's an expert, right? Everybody can grab something, a screen grab off their computer, and put it right up on their feed and claim that this is what's going to happen, when in reality, they don't understand the nuances of computer forecast models, which ones are the best, which ones are unreliable, and then us, as meteorologists on media, have to cut through the noise so that our audience can be safe and level-headed at the same time.
Science is showing ever more that there's more than just correlation between global climate change, but actual causation in some of this violent weather activity. The politics, especially in South Florida, attached to climate change, do they have a bearing on the credibility of your reporting when, you know, some significant percentage of the population believes the president that all this climate change talk is a hoax?
I'd actually invite you to look at some of the Yale and George Mason universities. They've done separate studies in both locations on Americans' acceptance of the state of the science of climate change. And you'll see that generally speaking across the country, we're up to 75% of the acceptance of global warming occurring, and about 60% of folks already do understand that it's greatly induced by our human footprint. I can tell you, though, that what's really driving what is an increasing percentage of those type of viewpoints from those surveys, okay, is precisely these type of events. It's not because a new computer model has come out that says that, you know, a 3 degrees centigrade of warming is going to cause X, Y, or Z conditions. It's because they're seeing what's already happening in real life. That's what's changing people's minds. And just like there are peer-reviewed studies in the Atlantic tropical basin that indicate that we are seeing a greater number of hurricanes going through these rapid intensification cycles caused by human-induced global warming, people then see a Cat 5 sitting over, you know, Grand Bahama and Abaco for 40 hours with winds gusting over 220 miles an hour and a storm surge to 25 feet, and they're realizing that something is happening. Minds are being changed by Mother Nature, and Mother Nature is changing because of what we're doing.
John, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
John Morales is the chief meteorologist at WTVJ NBC6 in Miami.
Coming up, what we, the media, and we, most of the public, get wrong about gun violence and how to fix it.
This is On the Media.